Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
A bar called Harold's Cave Creek Corral in Cave Creek, Arizona, about 600 miles from Salida, Colorado. The bar manager, a guy named Charlie Lutz, knows a regular named Bruce. Beer guy, Miller Lite, Coors Light, nothing fancy. Been coming in since around the pandemic. Approaches women, gets approached by women. Friendly, normal. On June 13th of 2025, Bruce is sitting at Harold's drinking a beer. 1 week later, Bruce doesn't come back. Well, because Bruce doesn't exist. His name is Barry Morphew. And on June 20th, 2025, he's pulled over in a traffic stop in Goodyear, Arizona, and arrested for the first-degree murder of his wife, Suzanne. Charlie Lutz found out that night, told Fox News Digital he spent 2 hours reading articles about the man he'd been serving drinks to for years. Had no idea. But somebody knew. A woman named Libby Spurl was at Harold's in March of 24 when the man she knew as Bruce walked up and asked her to dance. She looked right at him and said it to his face. "You're Barry Morphew." He told her no. She had the wrong person. And somebody else walked over and introduced him as Lee from Indiana. You know, Lee. Not Bruce, not Barry. Lee. A different name from a different person at the same bar in the same town. That woman recognized Barry Morphew 6 months after investigators found Suzanne Morphew's remains in a shallow grave near Moffat, Colorado, and more than a year before prosecutors would allege Barry signed paperwork that nearly destroyed his single most important piece of physical evidence in Suzanne's murder case. Paperwork that law enforcement stopped with less than 24 hours to spare. Barry Morphew has now been charged with the same murder twice. The first time, the prosecution collapsed so badly that the lead prosecutor lost their law license. What Barry did between the first case dying and the second one coming to life, that behavioral record is what 12 jurors in Alamosa will carry into the deliberation room. Your thoughts as we go through this in the comments section. Suzanne Morphew vanished Mother's Day of 2020 from the couple's home near Salida, Colorado. Barry was charged with her murder in May of 2021. The prosecution had fell apart, repeated discovery violations, withheld evidence. The judge barred key witnesses. Charges were dismissed without prejudice in April of 2022 because they had bungled it so bad. The lead prosecutor, Linda Stanley, was disbarred by the Colorado Supreme Court in 2024 for said misconduct, allegedly. After the dismissal, Barry skipped town, left Colorado. Do you blame him? I mean, whether he did it or not, do you blame him? Especially if he didn't do it, I'd be getting out of Dodge too. This is not about the forensics, not about the legal strategy or whether the lab work holds up under cross-examination. This is about what Barry Morphew did when nobody was watching and what every single one of those choices means depending on which version of Barry Morphew is real. After the charges dropped, Barry didn't stay in Salida, didn't stay in Colorado. He moved more than 600 miles to Cave Creek, Arizona. Property tax records show he settled into the Stardust Trailer Park. Doesn't that sound lovely?
listed himself as self-employed. He'd been a landscaper, an independent contractor back in Colorado. According to reporting, he held no professional license in Arizona. Here's a version of this that makes complete sense for the wrong, for a wrongly accused man. There really is. His name is on national news. Linda Stanley's prosecution made him the most recognizable face in Colorado for a time before a jury ever heard a word. Every Google search returns murder suspect. He can't work, can't date, can't walk into a gas station without wondering if someone is staring. He went somewhere. Nobody knew him because staying meant living in prison without bars. That reading is not unreasonable. People have done exactly this, fled from false accusations, changed cities, started over because the court of public opinion convicted them before the court of law even got a chance. The other reading is simpler. He ran. The charges were dismissed without prejudice, which means they could come back at any time. A man who knows what investigators might eventually find in a shallow grave in the San Luis Valley has a reason to put distance between himself and Colorado. Neither reading is provable from the move alone. The question is what he did once he got there. He used at least two aliases, Bruce at the bar, Lee at the gas station, Lee Moore. In the grand jury indictment itself, a former Colorado deputy DA called running two aliases in the same small town uncommon. Barry, he said, clearly did not want to be known by Barry. The generous explanation still works here. Of course, he used fake names. Barry Morphew is a death sentence to any social setting. The moment someone Googles that name, the conversation is over. Using a different name isn't consciousness of guilt. It's the only way to have a human interaction without being tried in someone's living room before the appetizer arrives, basically. But one alias is protection. Two aliases is a system. Bruce at the bar, Lee at the gas station. Different names for different people in the same town. Nobody can cross-reference. Nobody walks into Harold's and says, hey, that guy you called Bruce, a gas station, knows him as Lee. That's not hiding from judgment. That's managing information. Barry was a regular at Harold's, according to the bar manager. Drank beer, approached women, was approached by women. Lutz described him as friendly, social regular. Came in for years without raising a single red flag. When Libby Spurl recognized him in March of 24 and said his real name to his face, he denied it. Then someone walked over and introduced him as Lee from Indiana. Suzanne's remains had been found 6 months earlier. An autopsy would confirm homicide, and Barry is at a bar 600 miles away under a name that isn't his, asking a woman to dance. The generous reading? A wrongly accused man went to a bar and tried to have a normal life. He talked to people. He had a beer. When someone recognized him, he didn't want the nightmare to follow him into the one place where he could be a person instead of a headline. That's not sinister. That's survival. The other reading lives in the gap. What was being discovered about Suzanne's death and what Barry was doing with his evenings don't occupy the same universe. Either he genuinely believes he has nothing to worry about, or he's performing the life of someone who doesn't. Because while Barry is living at Stardust and going by Bruce at Harold's, the parallel reality is unfolding 600 miles east. In September of 23, investigators found human remains in a shallow grave near Moffat in the San Luis Valley. The remains are identified as Suzanne within days. A forensic anthropologist concludes she decomposed somewhere other than where she was found. No insect activity, no animal predation. Some of her foot bones are missing along with her bicycle shoes. Her cancer port and bike clothing are found with the remains. According to investigators, the body was moved at least twice. The El Paso County coroner ruled it a homicide. An autopsy identified Bruparafol, Azapurine, and Metromedine, all three chemicals that make up a wildlife tranquilizer that we're going to call, going forward, BAM. It's known as BAM in Suzanne's bone marrow. Prosecutors allege that when Suzanne disappeared, only one private citizen in that entire area of Colorado had a prescription for BAM. Guess who it was? Barry Morphew. He'd admitted in interviews to using it on deer at the family home roughly a month before Suzanne vanished. Investigators had already found a tranquilizer rifle in a locked gun safe in the Morphew residence and a needle cap for one of the darts in the family's dryer. A grand jury is convened in the 12th Judicial District. It hears evidence over months. On June 18th of 25, it returns an indictment. First-degree murder. 2 days later, Barry's pulled over in Goodyear, Arizona. That routine traffic stop by the Arizona Department of Public Safety, taken into custody and extradited back to Colorado. And according to reporting, Barry was at Harold's on June 13th, 1 week before his arrest. The bar manager didn't learn Bruce's real name until the news broke that night. Barry smiled during his first court appearances after he was rearrested. Jail staff at the Alamosa County Detention Center, where he spent 3 months before posting bond, reportedly described him as a superb inmate who kept to himself and showed respect for staff. According to his attorney, he was liquidating all of his assets to cover legal bills. Supporters helped post part of his $3 million bond. His daughters, Macy and Mallory, appeared with him at the January 26th arraignment in Alamosa. He pled not guilty for the second time. The generous reading. He smiled because he knows the truth, and he knows what a jury will eventually see. He was a model inmate because he's a decent person and in an innocent situation. He's selling everything he owns because the system is bleeding him dry for a crime he didn't commit. His daughters stand with him because they know their father. The other reading? He smiled because he peed it once and believes he can do it again. He was a model inmate because controlling perception is what he does. Look at Charlie Lutz, who thought he was Bruce for years. His daughters stand with him because they've been standing with him since the beginning. Whether that's the purest expression of a family's faith or the longest con in the case depends entirely on which version of Barry you believe. And that leads to the fracture nobody can really explain. Suzanne's own daughters walk into court besides Barry. Suzanne's sister, Melinda Balazar, and her brother, David Mormon, stand against him. Her brother has publicly called Barry soulless and said there's no redemption for him. A murdered woman's children standing with the man accused of killing their mother against the dead woman's own siblings, both sides, cannot be right. One of them has to be in the wrong. January 29th to 26th, 2 weeks after pleading not guilty, Barry signed paperwork authorizing the release of Suzanne's remains from the El Paso County Coroner's Office to a funeral home. Prosecutors learned the remains had been released on February 17th. They scramble for a search warrant. A judge signs it February 18th. And February 19th, the undersheriff goes to the funeral home to collect the remains. That's when he discovers Suzanne's body is scheduled for cremation the following day. One day. If that undersheriff had arrived 24 hours later, the remains that contained BAM, the prosecution's central forensic evidence, would have been ash. A second search warrant on February 24th turns up two forms with Barry's signature. One of them authorized the cremation. Prosecutors laid it out directly in their filing. The defendant in a murder case authorized the release of the murder victim's remains prior to pending motions and jury trial. He paid to have them cremated before his own experts' opinions were disclosed or court rulings on admissibility of scientific testing were issued. That's the take. Barry's defense filed a motion saying he takes no position on the matter. The generous reading exists here, but it has to work harder than anywhere else in this story. The daughters wanted their mother's remains released. They filed a motion for it. Barry signed the paperwork as next of kin. Maybe it was about burial, about faith, about closure. Maybe the cremation was the funeral home's recommendation and Barry didn't think about the evidentiary implications. Maybe takes no position is exactly what an innocent man's lawyer tells him to say when the optics are terrible. But the intent was clean. Of course, the other reading is there too. The one man in America who would benefit most from the bones being destroyed signed the paperwork to destroy them. And if one undersheriff had gotten there one day later, the bam in Susan's femur, the evidence prosecutors say ties Barry to the no one else in her death, would be gone. The aliases in Arizona have a generous explanation. The bar life has a generous explanation. The smile in court has a generous explanation. The cremation paperwork is the moment where the generous explanation has to do the most heavy lifting. Whether it holds up to 12 people in Alamosa, time will tell. Barry's been charged with the same murder twice. The first prosecution was so flawed, the prosecutor lost her law license. Second is built on bones, chemistry, and a wildlife tranquilizer that allegedly only one private citizen in that part of Colorado had access to. Between those two prosecutions, Barry Morphew moved 600 miles. He used at least two names that weren't his. He denied his own identity to a stranger he recognized that recognized him. He drank beer at a bar under aliases while investigators were pulling wildlife tranquilizer from his wife's femur bone. He smiled in court after being arrested a second time, and he allegedly signed paperwork to cremate the remains that contained the prosecution's most damning evidence one day before law enforcement intervened. Jury selection is scheduled for October 13th, 2026 in Alamosa. 12 people will sit across from Barry Morphew and try to answer the same question that lives underneath every moment in this behavioral record. Not whether the science hold, not whether BAM was really in Suzanne's bones, not whether the chain of custody is clean or the lab was properly certified. Those are questions the lawyers will fight over for 6 weeks. The question underneath, when it follows Barry Morphew from the Stardust Trailer Park to Harold's Cave Creek Corral to the Alamosa County Courthouse, doesn't require a chemistry degree. It just requires looking at everything he did and asking honestly, does this make sense? What do you think? Tell me in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to us or watching us on YouTube. Hit subscribe. And if you want to take us on the road with you in audio form, pick us up on your favorite podcast player. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and press subscribe. We do greatly appreciate that. Again, we'll continue the conversation in the comments section. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Suzanne Morphew's siblings had already booked their travel to Alamosa. Hotels reserved, flights arranged. They'd been through two arrests, one set of drop charges, a disbarred prosecutor, and the discovery of their sister's remains in a shallow grave. After 6 years of that, they were finally going to sit in a courtroom. October 13th was the date. 6 weeks of trial. Then the defense stood up and said they weren't ready. Judge Amanda Hopkins granted the delay. The trial for Barry Morphew now moves to spring of 27 at the earliest, possibly summer. And 5 weeks before that hearing, Barry Morphew's defense team had filed 31 motions in a single day. 31! Remember that number. Here's what the judge told the defense after granting the continuance. Next time, I'm going to take that to heart that you're giving me your best estimate. That's not boilerplate. That's a judge putting defense attorneys on notice on the record that they promised to be ready by fall and broke that promise. Keep that in your pocket. It comes back around here in this piece. To understand why another delay in this case lands the way it does, you have to understand the road that led here. Suzanne Morphew disappeared on Mother's Day of 2020 from Chaffee County, Colorado. Her bike was found on the side of a cliff off a county road. Her helmet turned up about a mile away on Highway 50. Her sunglasses and hydration pack were still in her car. Investigators believe the scene was staged. Now, Suzanne never went for a bike ride that morning. Barry Morphew was arrested in May of 21 and charged with first-degree murder. He pled not guilty. Then the prosecution imploded. District Attorney Linda Stanley's office missed discovery deadlines, withheld potentially exculpatory evidence, and committed violations so egregious that the judge barred 14 of their 16 expert witnesses 9 days before trial. In April of 22, prosecutors moved then to dismiss the charges. They said they believed they were close to discovering the victim's body. Stanley was later disbarred. That's how bad it was. Barry walked out of the courthouse with his daughters, Macy and Mallory, on either side of him. And he moved to Arizona. After the charges were dropped, Barry went on national television. He told the interviewer he'd done nothing wrong. He said he and Suzanne had a wonderful marriage. He had a $15 million federal civil rights lawsuit against the DA filed, the sheriff's office, the CBI, and the FBI. He relocated to Cave Creek, Arizona, more than 600 miles from Chaffee County, and he started a new life. His daughter said publicly that their father was innocent. The system had failed. The case was over. And Barry Morphew appeared to be moving on. Then his CBI team found what they were looking for. In September of 23, investigators searching for an unrelated missing person stumbled onto human remains in a shallow grave near the small town of Moffat in rural Sagauchi County. The remains were identified as Suzanne Morphew. A forensic anthropologist, a botanist, and an entomologist all concluded that the body had decomposed somewhere else and had been moved at least twice. And then the autopsy found something called BAM. It's a mixture of drugs that make up a tranquilizer compound used almost exclusively by biologists and veterinarians to sedate large animals. According to the grand jury indictment, the only private citizen in the Salida area in possession of BAM, it's not something you just go pick up at Walmart, at the time Suzanne disappeared, was Barry Morphew. He had told investigators he used it to sedate deer before cutting off their antlers. A grand jury in the 12th Judicial District indicted Barry for first-degree murder in June of 25. He was arrested in Goodyear, Arizona during a traffic stop. He posted a $3 million bond with money from anonymous supporters, and he pled not guilty in January 26. Judge Hopkins set trial for October 13th, 6 weeks. Both sides agreed. Barry waived his right to a speedy trial. That's the timeline. 6 years, two arrests, two sets of charges, and now another postponement. The defense's argument is that they're drowning in evidence. Attorney Alexis Bear Ellison told the court they didn't have a sufficient grasp of the discovery to question witnesses effectively. They asked for 4 to 6 additional months. Their estimate ready by May of 27. And to be fair, this is a massive case. The original prosecution generated a 130-page arrest affidavit. The evidence includes phone data, truck GPS records, forensic toxicology on the BAM compound, and unknown male DNA that partially matched 3 unsolved investigations in other states. On top of that, spy pen recordings from Suzanne's closet, botanist and entomologist reports on the remains, cremation paperwork Barry signed in early 2026, and the complete record of the first prosecution's misconduct. Barry's current attorneys, David Beller, Jane Fisher Breslin and Blair Ellison, were not on the first case. Iris Eaton handled the original defense. This team is reviewing everything from the beginning. Judge Hopkins said she understood. She described the volume of evidence as unbelievable, and she offered a rationale that on paper makes sense. No one wants to do this more than once. The first case collapsed because the prosecution cut corners. The second collapse from either side would be a disaster. If the defense goes in unprepared and Barry is convicted, an appellate court would scrutinize whether counsel had adequate time. If something gets missed, the family goes through the whole thing again. The judge is trying to build a trial that survives appeal. But the prosecution opposed the delay. They told the court January 27 provided enough time for both sides. That's 7 months from the hearing date. The state argued it was ready to go and that the defense had been on notice of the evidence since the indictment a year earlier. The defense wanted May
4 additional months beyond what the state said was sufficient. The judge split the difference and signaled spring with no firm date, possibly as late as June or July. The July 6 motions hearing will still go forward. The delay applies to the trial, not the pretrial litigation. And here's where the 31 mentions, or motions rather, come back. At the May 19th status conference, 5 weeks before the defense asked for the continuance, Barry's team filed 31 pretrial motions in a single batch, motions to exclude witnesses from testifying that Barry looked guilty or looked suspicious, motions to limit profiling testimony, motions to expand juror questionnaires, motions to preserve jury records beyond the standard retention period. 31 filings all at once, all on the same day. It's not a legal team caught off guard by the volume of evidence. That's the team executing a coordinated pretrial strategy. Filing 31 motions requires reviewing the discovery, identifying the state's weaknesses, drafting legal arguments, and organizing them for simultaneous filing. You don't do that if you haven't touched the case file. You do that if you've been deep inside it for months. And then 5 weeks later, you tell the judge you're not ready. One reading is that sequence is straightforward. The longer Barry stays out of the $3 million bond, or stays out on the $3 million bond with an ankle monitor, the longer he's free. Well, his attorneys were telling a judge they needed more time to prepare. Barry Morphew was living in Cave Creek, Arizona, under the name Lee Moore, at a local bar called Harold's Cave Creek Corral. The regulars knew him by yet another name, Bruce. The bar manager, Charlie Lutz, told Fox News Digital he had no idea who Bruce really was until the arrest hit the news. He said he was shocked. Barry met a woman in late December 24 and told her his name was Lee Moore. He moved into her home in May of 25 with most of his personal property, and she still had no idea who he really was. It says a lot. I get the idea of, okay, you're going to go start a new life somewhere, and you don't want all that to follow you. You're going to use a different. But if you're going to move in with somebody and she still doesn't know your name? Yeah. 5 days before his arrest, according to the Arizona Department of Public Safety arrest report, Barry told her the truth. He said his real name was Barry Morphew. He said his wife had been abducted in Colorado, not killed, not found dead in a field with wildlife tranquilizer in her boats. Abducted. When police searched the home after his arrest, they opened Barry's safe and found an AR-15-style rifle and a silencer. None of this is evidence of murder. Living under an alias is not a crime. Owning a rifle with a suppressor is legal in Arizona. Telling a girlfriend a version of your past that leaves out the part where you're the primary suspect in your wife's killing is not really obstruction. But it is a window into how Barry Morphew chooses to live his life. When his wife's bones have been pulled from a field with a tranquilizer in them that only he possessed. He didn't stay in Colorado and cooperate. He moved 600 miles away, changed his name, and started over. The CBI had been tracking his movements for months before the grand jury indicted him. They put a GPS device on his truck. Judge Hopkins' reasoning for granting the delay is defensible. The first prosecution was a catastrophe. A disbarred DA, discovery violation so severe the court barred nearly every expert the state planned to call, a case that cratered 9 days before trial. Nobody, not the prosecution, not the defense, not Suzanne's family, benefits from a second version of that. If building a trial that can withstand appeal means waiting a few more months, the logic holds. But the judge also said something Suzanne's family heard clearly. Next time, I'm going to take that to heart, that you are giving me your best estimate. The defense promised the court they'll be ready by fall. They broke that promise. The judge granted the continuance anyway, but she put the words on the record. If spring 27 arrives and the defense asks again, that sentence is sitting in the transcript. Whether it actually holds the line is a different question. Judges say things. Deadlines move. The case has taught that lesson more than once. Tom Grant, the attorney representing Suzanne's siblings, addressed the court saying his clients are tormented, he said, and they desperately need closure. He told the judge the family worries Barry is a flight risk. That concern carries a different weight when you know the man was living under a fake name in another state before he was arrested. Grant said the family had already made travel arrangements for the October trial. Arrangements will now cancel. Closure gets harder with every postponement. He told the court the weight compounds. three postponements now. Three rounds of preparing to face the worst details of their sister's death and being told to come back later. Suzanne's brother, David Mormon, and her sister, Melinda Belzar, have both said publicly they want Suzanne's remains brought back to Indiana, where she grew up. Barry's daughters, Macy and Mallory, have stood by their father since the beginning. They attended the first arraignment. They celebrated when the original charges were dropped. They helped post his $3 million bond when he was rearrested. They filed a motion earlier this year seeking custody of their mother's remains, then withdrew it before the hearing. The remains are still in state custody, in part because the last time the family tried to bury Suzanne, Barry signed cremation paperwork first. Prosecutors stopped it with a search warrant one day before the scheduled cremation. Suzanne Morphew disappeared on Mother's Day of 2020. The state of Colorado has charged her husband with murder twice. No jury has heard a single witness. The BAM is still in her bones. Her remains sit in the evidence locker because the state cannot risk losing them before a trial that has no firm date. And the man charged with killing her spent the years between the dropped charges and his rearrest living under someone else's name in someone else's house in another state, telling a woman he barely knew that his wife was abducted. The system says it needs more time. It always needs more time. The question nobody in a courtroom has to answer, but Suzanne's family answers every single day, is who pays for it? Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. Do they need the delay? Is it fair? Is it a good idea just to make sure this isn't turned into a retrial and everyone has to be drugged through the mud even longer? We were talking about this in the Murdaugh case the other day. Time is of the essence. But it can also be your worst enemy if you move too fast through it. Your thoughts? Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're getting podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. We do greatly appreciate that. We'll continue our conversation there in those comments. Those links are in the description. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.